From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and I want to welcome everyone to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance weekly podcast. Every week we bring you interesting individuals in the world of sports medicine, and they tell us a little bit about their passion and why they're in the business. And again, this week is no exception. We are so pleased to have Ms. Terry Gonzalez with us. Welcome, Terry.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you and why we have you on. Terry is the owner of Decor Fitness Studio. She has a bachelor's degree in kinesiology and exercise physiology. She is a certified personal trainer from the National Strength and Conditioning Association, and she's been in business over 10 years, and so she's got a lot of experience in working with people and helping them with their fitness goals. And so every once in a while we bring gym individuals on to talk about helping people get fit, and so we're so glad that you're with us here, Terry.
Well, thank you.
So let's just start with the basic thing. What made you want to get into exercise physiology and owning your own business?
Well, I guess exercise physiology came first, just because I wanted to help people just be more active and healthy, and to provide them with the keys to do that. And because everybody gets confused at what they need to do and how they need to do it. And so that was my first thing. And then whenever I got into the profession, didn't know I was going to be my own business owner, but that's
surprising,
just kind of, you know, the way it went, and I don't look back at all. I love it.
Yeah. Now, in the business, your studio is a little bit different type of fitness facility than what a lot of people may expect. So tell us a little bit about the different types of fitness facilities that are out there that are available for folks to go to get help with their activity and their wellness levels. And tell us a little bit about why yours is different from some of the others, you know, some general overview.
No, certainly. Now, the mega gyms that, you know, you have a huge weight room with a cardio facility, exercise classrooms, and then you have other more private fitness studios that maybe have the same things but are just on a smaller scale than the big mega ones with, you know, the swimming pools and all that. Mm-hmm. And then what I have is three private rooms that are just for personal training. It's like a little mini gym in a universal machine with free weights. Mm-hmm. And so basically you have a little weight room in one individual room. Mm-hmm. So you don't have that big atmosphere that you have in a large gym.
What's the advantage of a more personalized fitness studio like yours?
The one like mine, clients don't feel intimidated. It's just them and the trainer. They don't have that anxiety of the big gym that people might be staring at them. They feel more comfortable whenever, you know, they're in, you know, closed doors and it's, you know, just them and another person. So it's just a comfort zone.
Yeah. Now, is that a real fear for people? Is that something that you hear often?
I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of amazing because it's like, people are so worried about other people looking at them. It's just like, okay, if everybody in the gym is thinking that somebody's looking at them, then, you know, who's really doing the looking?
Right.
So, yeah, it's time and time
no
again.
No one's working out, they're all looking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So if an individual is thinking about joining a fitness facility, what are some of the things that you would point out to folks to look for in a fitness facility, whether it's a mega gym or whether it's a more personalized situation?
Pretty much if they're going to get what they need out of the gym, if it's convenient as far as proximity to their house, to their work. When I worked at a bigger club, a lot of people liked it because it was close to work so they could come in earlier on a commute so they didn't have to sit in traffic and work out. If it has the right equipment, if there's, you know, certified staff individuals that could, you know, help them through a, like, a workout so then that they could get the most out of the machines that are in the facility.
Okay. Now, are the folks that come to a more personalized facility, are they ones that need a little bit more help I mean, are there folks that are basically are pretty self-sufficient and you could turn them loose, or?
Actually, it's all of the above. I have people that come here that need extra help just because of health limitations and they're not too sure at what they need to be doing. People come here just to be accountable. They're perfectly healthy. They could do it fine in another gym, but they know if they hold the appointment time, they like the more personal, private setting that they don't have to be out where there's a lot of people. If they're like maybe a little bit more well-known, that they can get their workout in an hour here in a private setting than as opposed to into a big gym, because people might be stopping them and talking to them, and they're like, this is not my social hour. This is my time to work out and be healthy.
Right. Now, has there been is this movement towards personalized studios, is that a relatively recent thing? I mean, most people hear about the big mega gyms, but this smaller, more personalized studio, that's kind of a new thing, isn't it, a little bit?
I believe so. Being that I've only been in the industry about 10 years, I saw it pretty much popping up probably around 5 years ago. So it might have been, but it's definitely new in my eyes.
Yeah. Being in a personalized facility doesn't mean that you lose the ability to have group classes.
That's correct. At our facility, I don't know about other private studios, we have a small group exercise classroom where we offer Pilates, yoga, Zumba. So you still are getting that more one-on-one attention. Mm-hmm. The classroom only usually holds up to 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
As in a mega gym, you'll have, you know, 30, 40, depending on the size of the rooms in some classes. So people can kind of get lost in the mix, and the instructor might not know that you were there that day, or, you know, you were there. So in our classrooms, again, it's the whole accountability. You know, you have more personal, you know, relationship with the instructor, and they know you, and they'll be getting on to you if you didn't show up for that class that day.
Yeah, so you have all the benefits of the classes that you might get at a bigger gym, but you have more personalized instruction.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you can't train everybody that comes in your doors, and so your business is fairly large. You've got several personal trainers that work with you or work for you. But what do you look for when you look to hire a personal trainer? And then I guess we're going to do a follow-up on that. And what should people look for as they look for working with a personal trainer?
One major thing is if they're certified through a pretty accredited organization. Look for national certifications.
I'm going to pin you down on that one. So which national certifications are we looking for?
The National Strength and Conditioning Association,
okay.
The National Academy of Sports Medicine,
okay.
American College of Sports Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some of your other ACE, and then the Cooper Institute. They do a very good program up there. There are many, many certifying agencies that do personal training certificates, but these are more the top higher-level certifications that somebody would have to pass in order to become a certified personal trainer.
Okay.
So that would be number one. Two, if their degree is in that area of kinesiology, sports management, maybe they've had some athletic, you know, career and training background. They were maybe athletes in school. And then just personality, you know, meet with them and see if the person's going to be able to work with them, and that they'll definitely be able to mesh well in a private setting.
Well, and that's so important, is how you get along with the trainer.
Right. Because, I mean, you're with them for an hour, and if you already know that you're going to, you know, butt heads, or, you know, you just don't feel comfortable, then it's not going to work.
Yeah. Now, your female clients, do they tend to gravitate towards working with female personal trainers or males, or is there a difference between the genders and what they prefer, the type of personal trainer they prefer to work with?
You know, it goes both ways. Sometimes males, you know, clients want a female trainer just because they might be intimidated that the male trainer might push them too much, and they don't think that they're up to the strength that a guy might push them to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though we would make the assessment, male or female, what they would be capable of. And then the females, sometimes they'll gravitate to a female trainer just for comfort level. Mm. But it's, again, I always ask the client first, you know, what they feel comfortable with, and if it is a female and I'm going to refer them to a male trainer, if they are okay with that. And pretty much all the time, everybody is fine. But I don't want to ever put anybody in a position that they would not be comfortable in.
Okay. Now, I know we're going to have some listeners out there that are thinking to themselves, you know, I've got a treadmill at home. Yeah, it may have some clothes hanging on it, but I've got the treadmill at home. I can always work out at home. Well, I don't need to go to a gym. I don't need to go to a commercial facility. Do you have an answer for that?
Well, certainly if they're going to use it. We all have pieces of exercise equipment that we have bought at one point in time, and it's either collecting dust or, you know, storing clothes.
You mean I'm supposed to be using that ab roller I bought?
Yes! To get that good ab burn, yeah. But, you know, yes, you can have all the fitness equipment, but if you're not holding yourself accountable, you know, it's not going to do anything just sitting there. So you got to have to physically, you know, get in there and do a workout. And we can, you know, design programs for people to do at home all the time, but if they're not holding themselves accountable, you know, we can try to say, okay, we're going to design you this program. You can do it at home. Come see me in a month. And then they can come back, and that can be a little accountability factor for them, because if they didn't do it, then, you know, oh, they're going to have to tell the trainer, oh, I didn't do it. But, I mean, anybody can do have a home gym. It's just putting yourself and making yourself do the work.
Well, that trainer also makes you accountable, doesn't it? So I guess sometimes when people pay for something and they know somebody's waiting for them, they're more likely to do it, huh?
Unfortunately, yes. When you put money down, you know, it definitely makes people think twice about, you know, not going.
Walk me through the process that you use with a client. When you have a client comes in that says, you know, let's say I want to lose 20 pounds. What are some of the decisions that you walk the client through to determine how often they work out or how often they come see you and what they do?
Well, with somebody saying 20 pounds, I first need to see, you know, if they've been active up until this point. And depending on what they say, I recommend at least 2 times a week to start off with. If they've been pretty active and doing other stuff, I recommend 3, doing a total body workout with weight training. And then as far as cardiovascular exercise goes, it can be, I'd say, to try to shoot for at least 3 to 5 times, you know, if you're not doing anything for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're not up to that pace, you know, start with 20, and then we'll gradually get there. And then seeing how they're eating, and recommend them to either, if they don't know what to eat, to a registered dietitian, or offering them a service that we have is they're getting their RMR, which is your resting metabolic rate.
Okay. So if you have someone that comes to you, and I know there's some gyms out there that have made a living on the fact that they can give you a quick workout. So if you have somebody comes to you and says, you know, I don't have an hour a day to come work out, so I don't think I'm going to come exercise just because I don't think I can get any benefit out of less than that. What do you have to say to that?
Then I would say then, okay, you know, we'll do everything we can do in a 30-minute session in here, and then you just have to come, you know, more times, because you can only do so much in the time that you're given. So something is always better than nothing, but you're not going to be able to see fast results with just 30 minutes at a time. You'll see results, but it's going to be a little bit longer.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we're starting to hear someone in the popular media is that you can get the same benefit by working out for 4 minutes very hard as you can for working out in 30 minutes.
It would be very, very hard to prove to me that that's true.
So this whole idea of this high-intensity training, and that's all you do, that's not something that you would go for?
No, because after a while, if you're going to do that high-intensity training, something's going to blow out. If you're going to get injured, your body's just going to get burnt out, and then you're going to be back where you started from, not doing anything.
Yeah, and that's the key, isn't it? Keeping people active.
Yes, just being consistent.
Yeah, because if they're injured, they have a tendency not to be active.
Exactly. If something hurts, you're going to stay away from that.
Yeah. Now, as a gym owner, you know, you have all these people that come through your facility, and this is your opportunity to tell people, what are the top three rules of gym etiquette that you would tell people?
Your, you know, awareness on a machine. If it's, say, in the weight room and you're just kind of parked out and then on a machine and you're either using your cell phone, I guess that would be another number two rule. Try to refrain from using your cell phone in the gym. But like on the machine, just if you're camped out and somebody's needing to use that machine, to move through each machine in a timely manner. And the cleanliness, like say if you're on a treadmill, make sure you wipe down the machine after you use it, because nobody wants to go on a machine with somebody else's sweat.
Right, right. Yeah, so be clean, don't use the cell phone, and pay attention, huh?
Yes, I would think those would be my definitely top three.
Is there any good time of the year a person should think about joining a gym?
Better time than others? There's no better time. I mean, typically you have the January craze because people are thinking about it because it's a new, fresh beginning of the year, and you'll have people right before the holidays in September, October, want to get in and start working out because of the holidays are coming and they haven't lost the weight from the last holidays. But, it's whatever sparked. If you're thinking about it, you know, just go in. It doesn't matter when.
So how do you keep people involved and going with exercise? You know, that's such a big challenge that after, especially in the beginning of the year, after 2 or 3 weeks, people kind of go, nah, not going to make it, or it doesn't happen as fast as they think it should, and, you know, they have a tendency to drop out. What are some things and some tips that you use to help keep people motivated to continue to work out?
I just like to say, you know, you just got to be consistent, and it's going to pay off eventually. It didn't come on overnight. Your body didn't get out of shape overnight, and it's not going to get in shape overnight. So you just got to be patient with the workouts.
That's what people forget, that it takes a while for them to get to where they are.
Exactly.
But we all demand instant benefits, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
So, Terry, we really thank you for your time today. But we're running a little short here on time. And so as we do every week, I'd like to close and ask you to give us a take-home message. What's the one thing that people should remember from this podcast if they remember nothing else?
Just remember that get active, move around, do something, because it's going to help you out in the long run.
Great take-home message. And thank you so much again for being with us today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Well, you're welcome. And I want to thank everyone that's listening for taking the time to download us. We would encourage you to tell your friends about our podcast. Go on iTunes and write a review. We're going to be coming up on our 100th episode here in another month or so, and so we've got some good stuff going, and we really encourage you to continue to come back on a weekly basis and check out the people that we are talking to, because they are all interesting folks. Now, as we do every week, we've got a podcast T-shirt question, and so be the first one to send us the answer to the following question. What is an appropriate national certification for a personal trainer to have? So, again, be the first one to send us the answer to that question, and you will get one of those nifty podcast T-shirts that we have. In the meantime, please join us again next week, and we hope that you have a healthy and active week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Cheryl Marek and Samantha Springer and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.